I say it so that you would be prepared for those who might say, well, the Bible's full of contradictions. Why, Paul says no one ever hated their flesh, but people kill themselves. So understand, it's like, it's a figure of speech. And the point is that the Lord does not hate the church. No man hath ever hated his own flesh. He nourishes it, it cherishes it, even as the Lord, the church. The Lord nourishes and cherishes his church. And then you look at history and you think, well, look, here I go again with the doubts. But the doubters are there. And I look at history and say, like, well, look it. No, I don't look at it this way. But this is the way people think, well, you know, I almost don't want to get into this because we're at the end of a study. But they'll say, you know, the gates of hell will not prevail against the church. The earthly church must stand. But the gates of hell, it means death will not prevail against the church. It doesn't mean that what you see on earth, meaning the Catholic Church usually, of ancient times, the big C Catholic Church, although I'm going to say the small C Catholic Church, meaning the Eastern, back in the, you know, several hundred years after Christ, that they say, well, nothing bad could happen to the church because, you know, this and that, and God nourishes and cherishes his church, his body. But the church of God isn't just any one generation. You can have a generation where the church gets very small and very narrow, and where almost everyone is in apostasy. And then it has broader times and lesser times, because the church are those members of Christ who have put on Christ, put on his spirit, and they are growing from a seed into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, a perfect man. That is the church. Those are the ones who count. The other things that go on, it's not, look at, the earthly organizations are not the church. Like the idea that, like, let's say Luther's in the church, right? That doesn't mean that everyone who goes to his church is the body of Christ. Or that every church that has the name of some godly man on it is of Christ. Or count. Oh, that's his body. Yes, sirree. Doesn't all count. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Quoting from Genesis chapter 2. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. The way the two, we become, just remember you talked about the mystery of how the Gentiles and the Jews will be gathered together in one. Now here's another mystery, that Jesus and the church are going to be joined in one, like a holy matrimony, like a married couple. I mean, I'm not. See, the thing is, the way in which husband and wife become one flesh, okay, they think, oh, sex. Okay, yeah, that's the physical union. But there's a spiritual union in which we become like one. Even in all human relationships, even outside of Christianity. That's why there's an affinity in every civilization for the man and his wife. There's a bond that forms. You know what I mean? A strong bond. A lot of times now you say, well, what about divorce? How come divorce is so prevalent? Well, a lot of those people, they start off in fornication and then they get married. And I tell you, what begins in sin usually ends in sin. And that doesn't mean that people who fornicate can't stay married. I'm just saying, it's like you're not getting started right. You know, if you start off, oh, you're just my girlfriend, I'm your boyfriend, and we'll have lovemaking together, and we'll try it out, and maybe, you know, we'll kind of stay true to each other, right? You know, until one of us decides no, we'll kind of leave it open ended. You know, but for now, we'll be just kind of true to each other. I mean, what the heck is that? It's just, it's like not quite marriage, not quite whoredom. You know, what is it? It's, you know, friendship of, You know, the friendship of what? Fornication? You know, or a friendship of, you know, almost married, but not binding? And then when they go to get married, it's like, what, is this, now it's changed? Whatever bond you formed in the beginning, when you join together, it's pretty much the way it stays. That's why those marriages are so subject to dissolution. People who live together first get divorced more often than those who don't. Because why? Because they start off as fornicators, not as a married couple. And that kind of stays with them. There's always that out. They never change the way they look at each other. Try to, but the bond is not the same. Because there's not that acknowledgement. It's this mysterious and spiritual thing. And Paul is speaking of an even greater mystery of how Christ is a bond that forms. We're joined together with him. Just as I remember in the chapter 3, when he was talking about, or the beginning of chapter 4, he was talking about the one body, the one spirit, one hope of our calling, right? One Lord, one faith, one baptism, you know, and he talked about endeavoring to keep the unity of the spirit and the bond of peace. How those things, there was, you know, there are more than one church, right? I mean, there's a church here, a church there, right? But we are all one. One spirit, but the Bible talks about the seven spirits of God. Let's go forth to all the earth. There's one hope of your calling, but I hope in a lot of things. I mean, I'm just expecting just one thing. But this, the point is, it's all bound together. It's all joined in one. And there's two in a marriage, but they're joined. They're bound together. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself. He's saying, okay, it's about Christ, but in particular, don't get away from the fact that there is a reality here. Beyond the spirit, in the flesh, you need to love your wife as yourself. And wife, you've got to reverence your husband. And that's the word phobeo, which is where we get phobia or fear from. Wife has to fear her husband. You know, what, am I supposed to be afraid of him? No, not like... But yeah. What you're afraid of is that... It's like the way I'm afraid of the police. No, I'm not afraid of the police. Except in the areas in which I'm not lawful. Then I start fearing the police. Like I'm missing the front license plate on two of my cars. They're not actually my cars. That makes it even greater difficulty. Now I got to get a replacement plate. All right. But when I drive and I see a cop, I kind of feel fear come over me. Because I know I'm out of compliance. Someone gave me a warning on that.